When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Are you ready?
Hey, think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down!
DGen Nation fam, what is up? What is happening? We're back again. It's the DGen Nation podcast powered by the Fantasy Authority, here to talk about top and middle and late round targets, I guess, if we can get that out here. Ryan Williams here at Ryan Alexander underscore W is where you can find me on Twitter, joined by the usual suspects, the godfather himself, Mr. Kevin Steele at Fantasy Rat 13, and Maddie 2v2, Maddie DFS on Twitter, Maddie Dickinson there. Boys, we're here to talk about the middle and late round targets. There's a ton, I feel like, that we've touched on a little bit sporadically as we've done two shows already, this being our third. But there's a lot of questions that are being had at ADP and a lot of just questions in general with landing spots not being set for a lot of people to defer from. Kev, we kind of started with you on the last episode. So, Maddie, I want to hear from you as you're looking at ADP and seeing where you can take advantage of, and it doesn't have to be position, you know, based necessarily, but where are you looking at for the middle and late round targets? What are you getting to as far as maybe it's teams, or maybe it's a sneaky stack, or maybe it's something that might be unknown that you're looking to take advantage of? Talk to the people.
Yeah, so really, I just wanted to bring up a couple mid to mid-late round targets that I'm seeing that I think really stand out in terms of, you know, that could be league winners at the running back and wide receiver position. The first one being Chase Edmonds for the Arizona Cardinals. Kenyon Drake is likely to not return for the Cardinals to be their starting running back. So we've seen Edmonds do it while Kenyon Drake has been hurt. And Edmonds has even produced with Kenyon Drake on the team and playing the same in the same game. So Chase Edmonds, he's currently going at RB 33 on underdog. And I think that's way too low. I think he's got top 20 upside as a running back, as a starting running back for Arizona. You could even argue top 10 running back upside if he were to play a full season. So I think Chase Edmonds is just criminally underpriced there. Right ahead of him as well at RB 30 is Raheem Mostert in San Francisco, which I mentioned, you know, the San Francisco offense is one that I like on our intro show last week. Mostert's going to get the bulk of the work, the early down work. He's their main guy. Yes, they do tend to run three or four running backs out there on a weekly basis, but Mostert is the guy who gets 10 to 15 touches a week, and he's explosive. And in that offense with Kyle Shanahan at the helm, you know, calling the plays and you know, the schemes that they cook up for their running backs. I really do like Mostert there. He's explosive. He's one of the fastest running backs in the league. So he's always got that home run upside, which we talk about on each episode. You know, you want guys with that high upside, and Mostert does have that splash play ability. So those are two of the mid. I mean, you could even say they're going late for the running back position, going not even in the top 30. So definitely two that I'm looking at there. Running back, and then sliding over to wide receiver, Juju Smith-Schuster is another mid-range guy that I'm really looking at. We've been talking about, you know, taking advantage of uncertain situations, and I jokingly said off stream before the show that, you know, if I can have Juju at ADP of 67 and noodle arm Ben Roethlisberger is not throwing him the ball, sign me up. So I'm in on Juju. You know, had 100 catches, 900 yards, 9 touchdowns with noodle arm Big Ben throwing him the ball. I am all for Juju getting a change of scenery if he does not return to Pittsburgh, which it sounds like he is not going to do. So yeah, he could be the wide receiver one somewhere and not really have Deontay and Claypool stealing his targets, which it seems like Juju's operated best as the wide receiver two, when AB was in town though. So maybe he does need a counterpart, there, but a contending team, may want to sign Juju. He's only 24. So, I'm excited for Juju to change teams and I think that, you know, he can smash for fantasy purposes. And then outside of that, Corey Davis is another one. Ryan, you brought him up on the last show. You know how I like to, you know, pick on him all year in DFS with the Titans. We've got no clue where Corey Davis is going to land, but the volume can only go up in terms of a pass offense that he's going to be involved in. The Titans are one of the lowest pass rate teams in the league. They love to run the ball. Anywhere he goes, like let's say he hypothetically ends up in Green Bay, a team that desperately needs a wide receiver, opposite of Devontae Adams. And, you know, maybe Aaron Rodgers is now throwing the ball to Corey Davis with a little bit more volume in a passing offense. So on a team that, you know, maybe not have Aaron Jones. So there is, you know, a lot of uncertainty as where Corey Davis is going to land, but the kid's talented. He showed it this past year. He checked all the boxes in terms of underlying metrics like air yards, target share, market share. And he was basically one for one, the same production as AJ Brown. And AJ Brown, we all hype up as this top 10 wide receiver in the league right now. And for good reason, AJ Brown's a stud, but I think that there is a lot of negative, you know, kind of discussion that goes around towards directed at Corey Davis because he had a disappointing rookie and sophomore year. And then finally he had a breakout year last year. He's a talent that I want to bet on at a cheaper price. He's currently going around ADP of 100. So 112 to be exact. Four guys that I'm interested in there.
Yeah, no, all great options, Maddie, for sure. And you know, wide receiver is definitely a fun one to look at as we're, you know, talking about middle and late round targets. How many times have we mentioned, you know, the Colts bringing in Wentz into that situation? But a guy like Paris Campbell, who's going well into the 150s, who's coming off of an injury there. I know Michael Pittman's a favorite. I have him on a couple of best ball teams, and Kevin kind of alluded to him in our first episode that we did of best ball, of him kind of being a sleeper, and you're looking at the ADP now, and it's not really catching up to a guy like him. So he definitely finds himself in an interesting situation. And another situation that I'm looking at too is just the Giants. I mean, you know, like guys like Darius Slayton, Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard being there. Daniel Jones is not really attractive. Saquon Barkley is going to be back and hopefully healthy there as a stud running back that we're accustomed to seeing him as. But I think there's a lot of question marks to be had there as the Giants. And when we're talking about home run hitters, you know, at the position, tight end is really ugly. So getting Evan Ingram lay where people are talking about him having, you know, no hands or whatever the case may be, taking a flyer on him could be enticing. And then a guy like Darius Slayton late, I think is interesting. Kev, what are you looking at as far as middle and late round targets go as you're building your best ball teams?
Yeah, to me, I mean, there's quite a few guys that really stood out to me. Just as far as the kind of the middle round guys that I'm going to be looking for, and that, you know, some of it doesn't really surprise me because of how they finish, but, you know, Miles Sanders for me is going ridiculously low in terms of just where he was going last year to where he's going this year. He's currently coming off the board about 28.7 RB18, RB19 range. And to me, there is a lot of upside here with him as a whole. Like if you go back and, you know, we just kind of remember last year, like he wasn't, I think in most people's mind, like he wasn't what everybody was hoping to be. He was somebody that was really hyped up. I was on that train last year for him, but he still wasn't as bad as what people tried to make him out to be. if you look at his numbers, he was on pace last year had he played a full 16. I mean, he played 12 games, but had he played a full 16, he would have rushed for 1,200 yards, or he was on pace for 1,200 yards and, you know, likely somewhere probably in 8 to 10 touchdown range, and then with probably another 300 to 400 yards receiving. So, I mean, he was on pace to have a really solid season. And in terms of the efficiency numbers, like, those were all there. He was 10th in yards created per touch, which was 1.67, 14th in total yards created. And again, that's impressive considering he only played in 12 games. His route participation was 4th at 62.9%. He was 7th in routes run. He's 6th in opportunity share. And now with Doug Peterson gone, we'll have to see kind of how things shake out here. But I don't think they're going to bring in a running back that is going to truly threaten him. Boston Scott is a free agent, so he is gone. I do think they'll probably bring in somebody, but I don't think it's going to be somebody that's going to neuter him or take away his opportunities. And he was 7th in weighted opportunity. And I think with just this offense getting better as a whole, like when they went through that stretch last year, that probably 6, 7, 8 game stretch where that offense fucking just awful, you know, with all that gone, the offensive line back, getting Brandon Brooks back, you know, who they lost over the offseason program, which was a massive blow to that offensive line. I think the arrow is pointing up for Miles Sanders, and I am looking to buy, especially as low as he's going. He was a guy for most people that were taking in the, you know, as a top 10 running back, and now he has really fallen off. So I like him quite a bit. I can't help but mention A.J. Dillon. Just keep hammering that A.J. Dillon. If you're going to be able to get him, you know, it looked like right now he's going about right around the 5th round. That is too low for him. Aaron Jones likely isn't coming back. So just keep taking A.J. Dillon, getting the starting running back for the Green Bay Packers, you know, in that range. You're likely not going to get him any cheaper. I am a proponent of taking some of these rookie running backs that I think their value is only going to raise. You know, Javonte Williams, certainly. But even guys like Najee Harris, I think you could take a look at. But even it's not even them. Like, if you go way down and some of these other guys were the more unknown running backs, a lot of people don't know who they are. You know, Kenny Gainwell, Jamar Jefferson, you know, both those guys could be top 5 running backs and land in the right spot. Now, yes, you're kind of taking a gamble on them, but I think they're worth it. Even like an Anthony McFarland, depending on what Pittsburgh decides to do, at, you know, somebody they drafted last year, he actually led last year's class in yards created, and he is going at 212. So taking just a shot on that guy, or Darrington Evans in Tennessee, you know, those guys that are going to be going super, super late. Kylan Hill, who's a rookie this year, is another guy that people that should be taking. I like taking those shots on those really late round guys at running back. But at wide receiver, you know, there's some guys that just automatically, Brandon Ayuk, 58th overall, wide receiver 26. He should be going higher than that. That stretch that Brandon Ayuk had last year was legendary, that most people in DFS didn't jump on until late, because he was just on a run last year. Wide receiver 6, 13, 14, 10, 6, you know. And then when everybody finally got on the train, he laid a goose egg in week 16, but then he got hurt. But yeah, Brandon Ayuk is going to be an absolute stud. They're going to continue to get the ball in his hands in many different ways. There may be some people that are a little hesitant because of the fact that, you know, George Kittle will be back and 100% healthy. Debo Samuel will be healthy. So, you know, how does he fit in? How much opportunity does he have? But I still like that value for him. I think he's a credible value at right now. And then Tyler Boyd is always consistently undervalued every single fucking year. And it's like he was on pace. He was a wide receiver 1 last year when Joe Burrow was healthy. When Joe Burrow went down and the insert shitty quarterback that they have, you know, he fell off a cliff. And so I like Tyler Boyd quite a bit. He's wide receiver 29 right now, 65th overall. I like that value. He is a strong, and A.J. Green is gone. And right now it looks like it's going to be him and T. Higgins in that offense. John Ross is also a free agent, which he was never a factor anyways last year. So I like both of those guys as kind of those wide receiver 3s you're probably getting on your team, depending on how your draft plays out. And then I'm just going to say it, you know, he's not really necessarily, I guess, falls in the range of a late or middle guy, but Julio fucking Jones going at 45th and like wide receiver, what was he? Wide receiver like 20, something like that, is fucking stupid. I get it. He's getting older. He's 32. He just turned 32. I get it. But he was still Julio fucking Jones last year. A lot of people like to talk about him like he fell off a cliff or something. He did not. He was 8th in fantasy points per route run last year. All of the efficiency numbers are still really good for him. And yes, he dealt with some injuries last year, only played in 9 games, but he had plenty of boom weeks, and that's exactly what we're looking for in best ball anyway. So I'm about that life. He had 33.7, 20.7, 24.7. The numbers are all there still for him. So I still, if he's going to drop that far, I'm going to have a lot more Julio Jones on my teams than I thought I would, because if he was going wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4, no, I'd probably pass. But where he's going now makes him an incredible value. So those are the guys that I'd be targeting in the middle round.
Yeah, I mean, Julio Jones is absolutely incredible. I mean, this is a guy who is consistently in the top 12 of the wide receiver position, like every year that he's been involved. And if he's on the field, like you're saying, Kev, I mean, we're in best ball, you're looking for just the booms, the boom weeks. And when you can take advantage of a guy like Julio Jones going that late. I mean, injury game, if you want to play that, then sure. I mean, maybe best ball is not for you to begin with if you're already thinking about the injury game before you draft your players. You should always be thinking about upside, and when he's on the field, he's going to do damage. You know, the allergic to the end zone type of stuff. They don't like to give him the ball. I think that's kind of gone to the wayside. It's still Julio Jones. So that is definitely a huge value to get him at. A guy that I was beating the drum for in the previous episodes and who I still like is Darnell Mooney. I mean, it's not like they invested a huge, you know, draft capital equity in this guy, but again, it's the Bears, so they don't have too many picks to begin with. So any pick that they make is probably a value, but you're looking at Allen Robinson probably being gone. Anthony Miller coming back off of an injury. The tight end situation is pretty much Cole Kmet and then a bunch of other guys. And Darnell Mooney was catching on strong there, before his injury, just really being a dynamic player there. And so if they can upgrade the QB position, I think it's definitely wheels up for him. But even if not, I mean, he's going to be the main guy. And I'm, you know, we're talking about – Kev, you mentioned it in Cincinnati, a guy like Ryan Finley, like they still have to produce. So fantasy points are still going to be coming, like Tua in Miami, like fantasy points still got to come from somewhere. And if he is going to be an alpha wide receiver 1, at the very least a wide receiver 2, he's definitely going under the radar and definitely makes for a good late target there. I want to stick on the running back, because I do think it's interesting as we see some of these situations unfold. And Kev, you kind of brought up the rookies who, you know, I don't think people want to draft the rookie running backs without knowing where their landing spot is, because that seems to be a big thing for them. I mean, look at the Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire of last year. Them getting their landing spots really kind of skyrocketed them and catapulted them up in the boards too. And Maddie, you mentioned a guy like Chase Edmonds too, but I want to talk about if there's any guys like who are going under the radar. I'm looking at guys like Nyheim Hines, you know, being the kind of handcuff, I guess, so to speak, to Jonathan Taylor, who is basically going as a first round pick for some people. And then Nyheim Hines is going way later at the running back position. And Nyheim Hines had a role in this offense. So that'll be interesting to see kind of how that unfolds and rolls out. I'm looking at guys like JD McKissick, who's going late, Zach Moss, who's going late, with Devin Singletary, who doesn't really stand out to me at all. So if Zach Moss is going to be the lead guy in that backfield, you could get a late flyer. Are there any late flyers specifically at the running back position? Because that is a heavy position. We're looking at running backs, you know, going very favored in the top 3 rounds of best balls at this current state in the game. So you're always looking to get that value at wide receiver, but value at running backs, what's sticking out to you guys, if anything at all? Maddie, I'll start with you, if there's anything.
Chase Edmonds and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are two guys going, you know, cheaper than they should be. They're not necessarily values, but I mean, it's hard to know without knowing especially with the rookies, where some of these guys are going to land, because scheme and opportunity really is king for running backs. But if I was going to take a shot, I'm not even going to say it. Kev, if you're going to take a shot on a rookie running back, who's it going to be?
Taking out of some of the guys that are probably like
Javonte.
Well, yeah, I mean, but those are probably the guys.
A layup for Javonte Williams, and you. Well,
I already mentioned him. I already said it. I already said it earlier. Like, hell yeah! Like, I'm about Javonte Williams' life, but he is going much higher than a lot of these other guys. That he is going in some of the ranges of guys who are, you know, NFL, you know, guys that we may have an idea of who they are, who they should be, or where they're their opportunities. Because if you look at where he's going, like I said, A.J. Dillon range, Chris Carson is still on the board, Melvin Gordon, Ronald Jones, like all these guys. Listen, I think that if he lands in the right spot, he goes to a Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Arizona, then it's wheels fucking up for Javonte Williams, and he flies up this draft board. And probably the same thing with Najee Harris once we figure out his draft board or what his draft position. But right now, Najee Harris is going 34.9, much higher, and getting much closer to taking away the value that you have from him. You're still getting some value because if he goes and lands in that perfect spot, he's going to be a guy who you see going in the top 10 here. But in terms of the other guys, I mean, you look at like Kenny Gainwell, 104.9 is his ADP. That's probably going to change depending on where he lands. Like a lot of this stuff is on that. Michael Carter, 143. Michael Carter is a terrific running back and not somebody I project as a three down back, but somebody that people should definitely be looking at. Some of the guys I already talked about, Kylan Hill is on Jamar Jefferson. I haven't even seen Jamar Jefferson's name on this list yet. And if I have it, that's a fucking mistake because Jamar Jefferson is a fucking baller and somebody that I think that could be a true three down fucking workhorse. I've been scrolling through here trying to find him. I have not seen his name yet. I'm sure he's going somewhere. But guys like this is where you get your value because this is where you are going to win a draft is by nailing these dudes because once we get the draft, once this stuff happens, all of this changes and all of these dudes start shuffling around and moving up. And same thing with free agency. You know, we're going to get another shift in the market because we're going to start getting some more answers to where some of these guys are at. Because right now there's a lot of uncertainty. And with the amount of guys that are free agents this year, it's hard to not step on a landmine and be like, oh, is this guy a free agent or not? Because there's so many free agents this year. So we're going to get a lot more movement than we typically do. But, you know, like I said, I think the edge right now is taking a shot on a few of these running backs that are rookies late. And you're going to get them at the cheapest they're ever going to be in terms of value. So I do like those guys in terms of like, even wide receiver right now, like I am drooling and salivating over the fact of being able to get Denzel Mims at wide receiver 54. If they get a quarterback, especially if they trade for Deshaun Watson, Denzel Mims is to the moon, right? Because Denzel Mims is a fucking baller and played in terms of just how bad that offense was last year. But Denzel Mims is a 96th percentile fucking speed score, a 90th percentile fucking burst score, 95th percentile catch radius. The guy is a fucking monster, 6'3", 207. And like I said, limited opportunities last year really, really look good. And I would get so frustrated because I played him last year in DFS because I kept waiting for him to go off, but that offense was so incompetent. But Denzel Mims is an incredible value right now and somebody that could easily finish as like a wide receiver too and somebody that gives you multiple weeks of usability. And like I said, they land the right quarterback, whether that's – or even if they stick with Sam Darnold. I like – Denzel Mims, and he is by far my favorite late round guy at wide receiver.
What about
go ahead, Manny.
Non rookie, but what about non sexy guys like Gus Edwards? You know, he's going like the 130 ADP range. He's going to split time with J.K. Dobbins, but I mean, he's got a role locked in with that Baltimore offense, and like we've seen him even with Dobbins, you know, getting. Starting to take over the lead role down the second half of the season last year, Edwards was still pretty heavily utilized towards the goal line, and Mark Ingram's not coming back. And so I don't know, like guys like that, I think are okay to take shots on in late round. If you're looking for a running back to help contribute to your team, I don't necessarily, I mean, it would take an injury to J.K. Dobbins for Gus Edwards to be like, you have to have him to win a league, but if you're just trying to fill out a roster with, like, let's say you've taken risks on other players on your team somewhere else, like in the middle rounds of your draft, and you're getting down to it, and you're just like, I just want a safe guy who, you know, I am likely going to use a few times here and there to mix in with these riskier plays that I have at other spots on my roster, and you don't want to go full balls to the wall throughout your entire roster top to bottom, then I think guys like that are kind of interesting, but. I don't necessarily think that he's got, you know, the highest upside in the world, but he does probably have the safest role of the area that he's being drafted in.
Yeah, no, but, I think – oh, go ahead, Kev.
No, I was just going to say, no, I think that does make sense in trying to identify certain guys who maybe, you know, and maybe Pittsburgh doesn't draft a running back really high, right? And they stick with Benny Snell and Anthony McFarland. Benny Snell is going incredibly late as well. Like, he's not somebody that's 205.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Is where he's being drafted, and Anthony McFarland at 212. Like, taking some shots at this, and because we all expect Pittsburgh to take a running back, but they don't have a ton of money. They have other areas that they could address, maybe offensive line, especially when they're losing, you know, their center and everything else, and they're going to have some areas they're going to have to improve in. Their defensive line is set, but maybe they don't take a running back, and they stick with Benny Snell and Anthony McFarland. Well, those guys are incredible values because 205 and 212 is where they're coming off the board. So taking some shots on those guys that have incredible upside, that, you know, if you hit on those guys or one of those guys, it's wheels up.
Yeah. And it gets interesting there in the rounds 15, 16, 17, 18, if you guys are drafting on Underdog or even on Best Ball, because that's really where you're looking to take some of these flyers. Like Kev's alluded to, Kevin, you've already brought up McFarland twice. And I think that's a good point, because they did kind of invest some draft capital in a guy like him, with having Benny Snell there and already having Connor there. But now that situation is going to be flipped on its head. Roethlisberger isn't getting any younger. So to get a guy in Pittsburgh, and Tomlin's still there, like, they love to run the ball. They love to get that established. And that's very interesting. I do think that, you know, looking at situations and how they unfold too, because Rashad Penny for Seattle, you know, you can get him kind of late too. And if Chris Carson, he's going to be a free agent, and they don't bring Russell Wilson back, or they trade him, so to speak, not bring him back, they trade him to another team. Like, we know what Pete Carroll likes to do, because he has Russell Wilson there. He doesn't want to let Russ cook. So he's going to run the ball. And I mean, how many times have we waited for Rashad Penny to kind of take things over and do something? Some of the running backs. So there is a lot to be had there. And I think it does speak to kind of knowing, Matty, you've alluded to it, knowing the structure of your draft, knowing what people are doing around you and how they're drafting, but just in the sense of how you're building your team and what can unfold, because there are ways to kind of take advantage of things late. I wanted to touch on another wide receiver here, but it missed me. So I don't know. We're hitting on all of them. I feel like we're hitting all the spots of just where you can take advantage of, where people are kind of thinking and where they're going, and things just going under the radar. Are there any other things that we might have missed that could be going under the radar for these middle and late rounds that we haven't hit on yet?
The only thing I would say is maybe getting in on some of these tight ends, because there's a lot of variance once you get past really the top two guys, really. Travis Kelce and Kittle, I should say, and probably top three, should add Darren Waller into that with how consistent he's been the last couple of years. You know, I don't think you can put Mark Andrews into that because of volume. TJ Hockenson could be interesting because he could end up just being the only fucking guy in Detroit there for Jared Goff to throw the ball to. But I think some of the other tight end, there is a lot of guys who have, you know, a pretty high ceiling. Jonnu Smith, who's a free agent, depending on where he lands, you know, he could finally land in a spot where teams decide to use him because he is an athletic fucking monster. Irv Smith, who's going pretty damn late at 137. You know, I already talked about Austin Hooper on a previous show, 153.8 on here. You know, Adam Trautman was a great name to bring up, somebody that in an offense that's not going to have a lot of love. Donald Parham in the Chargers, if they don't bring in enough time. Christopher fucking Herndon. Chris Herndon, 201 for the Jets. I love that landing spot, and I love getting my hands on him because we know some of these guys are going to break out. They're with the Jets, and we're just going to be like, yep, Adam Gase fucked it up again. So I think there's some tight ends here that I would take some shots on, because I think most people, like, if you can get Travis Kelce or George Kittle, you know, early, I would look to do so. But if you get past those guys and probably Darren Waller, it's time to wait on tight end and start stacking some of these later round tight ends.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, Maddie, before you say something like that, that's what I was looking at, too, was the late round tight ends. As Kev was talking about Denzel Mims, I mean, Chris Herndon has been a guy who's burned people for two seasons, I feel like, in a row of just thinking that he was going to break out and not do anything. But he's still going to be there. A guy like Mo Alie-Cox in Indy, now that Carson Wentz is there, are they Frank Wright is there. He's the tight end guru. Like, are they going to try and run Jack Doyle, who signed until 2022, and Mo Alie-Cox there, make them significant? Like, I agree with Kev. We were talking about this in pre-show. Like, outside of the top three in Kittle or Kelsey, Kittle and Waller. I don't want to get them mixed up because Kelsey's a stud. But outside of those guys, and maybe you throw Mark Andrews into the mix if he can get something going, but you don't need to reach on any of these other guys if you can get some of these late round tight ends going. So as you pick it up, Maddie, I just wanted to allude to that there are some late round targets at the tight end position that do make for interesting value.
Yeah, and I don't really want to focus my time too much on specific guys. I more so wanted to hit back on a point that I kind of touched on last week in the intro show. And that's, if you're not taking one of those Kelsey, Kittle, Waller tight ends at the top, feel free to grab three tight ends in the middle, like the back end of the draft, like rounds 10 plus, and let them just kind of mix and mangle into your starting lineup over the course of the season, because tight end is volatile. Even the guys we feel confident in the middle rounds will have multiple dud weeks throughout the year. There's only those three guys at the top, really, maybe even only two. Like, I could argue it's really only Kittle and Kelsey who don't have dud weeks, because Waller has a monster ceiling, but he can still put up 4 points on any given week. Whereas Kittle and Kelsey, they're basically pretty much a lock for double-digit points week in and week out. Kelsey even more so than Kittle, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, if it's just so important to know that if you're going to spend draft capital on a tight end up top, that you really need to limit the number of tight ends you pick, because you need that guy to smash week in and week out, or else that draft capital up top would not have been worth it. So if you're taking a guy like Kelsey, limit your roster to two tight ends. And if you're not taking one of those top tight ends, I think taking three tight ends is the way to go. And mix and match those guys off the wall, like Herndon, like Ryan and Kevin mentioning. So I just wanted to touch briefly more so on the strategy point of tight end, as opposed to diving into some specifics. But because I think you guys hit the nail on the head at the tight end position. So I just think it's same thing with quarterback. I think a lot of people, they spend too much draft capital on those two positions when you only get to start one per week. So it's just important to know how you're allocating that draft capital to those two positions.
And you brought it up before, Maddie, on our first show. Like, if you were taking Mahomes early, you're probably only going to take one other quarterback, right? You're going to ride with it. You're going to say Mahomes my guy, like, if he gets hurt. But
if I'm drafting a guy at a position like quarterback or tight end that early, I need them to absolutely smash and outpace the field so far that it made sense to take them that early, because the gap in where you're drafting that QB or that tight end as opposed to where all the others are being drafted is so large that they have to absolutely smash for it to make sense for you to draft them there. Whereas running back and wide receiver, they're all kind of grouped together in a very, very tight window of picks. Whereas like the first running back off the board and the 20th running back off the board, maybe only 25 or 30 picks apart from each other. Whereas the first QB and the first tight end off the board and the 25th and 25th quarterback and tight end off the board are like maybe 200 picks apart from each other. So it's just, you need to kind of assess where your draft capital is going. And I think tight end is an important position to kind of play around with, two versus three, depending on which route you go up top.
Kev, before I switch it over to you, because I want to get your thoughts on something, I have two things that I really wanted to touch on. And I guess I'll start with this one. Maddie kind of alluded to it in the last podcast, too, with just the New Orleans situation. We don't know what's going on there at the quarterback position. So we got Jameis Winston, we got Taysom Hill. Unless they do something else, like what late round flyer would you feel comfortable in taking at that point. I think I know the answer for you, Kev. But I'm just curious because that is, there's equity to be had there about whoever is the starting quarterback. I mean, we know Sean Payton, like, he's living in his basement, loves Taysom Hill to the T's, but they brought in Jameis on this contract, and they could be bringing him back too to be doing something if Breeze hits the booth. So that's a situation I just wanted to touch on as we are talking about middle and late round targets here.
You mean which quarterback without what I want? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Basically, which quarterback would you feel comfortable in? Because they're both going super late. So, I mean, at that point, you're just taking a stand on who you would want. And I think I know your answer. But again, it's just it's Sean Payton. We don't know what he would do if the two options are given there. So they both carry some weight. And I'm just curious to hear how you guys feel about the two of those guys.
Give me Jameis is where I would go. Right. Jameis is great for fantasy purposes. I don't know how much he's grown as a, as a real life NFL quarterback, but in terms of fantasy purposes, like, I think Jameis would be fantastic. Taysom Hill brings that level of Konami code and everything else, but I think he would get exposed really quickly. We started to see a little bit, before that Drew Brees came back last year. Like, he's not a great passer. That's not his game at all. He is much more of just a gadget kind of player, and I think he would be better suited staying in that role and not trying to be a starting quarterback. I think it would be ridiculous. Like, I can't see a scenario. If they bring Jameis Winston back, it's for him to start. He is not going to come back there, in my opinion. With the amount, there's still a lot of landing spots left for quarterbacks right now. Chicago needs a quarterback. New England needs a quarterback. Washington needs a quarterback. Like, there's a lot of landing spots right now for quarterbacks, and I just can't see a scenario where if he comes back, it's to be the starter. So I would be shocked if he came back and he's just going to chill holding the clipboard again. Like, he's still young. He still has that ability. And so, like, I think he probably wants a shot at a starting job. And the Saints would be fucking amazing if they were to give it to him.
So in that regard, does that make Jameis the best quarterback player to pick right now? Because if you're approaching it that way, like you're saying, if he comes back to the Saints, he's going to be the starting quarterback of the Saints. He's not going to ride pine again behind Taysom Hill. Okay, if he doesn't quarterback the Saints, he's going somewhere where he is going to quarterback, and he's currently being drafted as the 28th quarterback off the board right now. And we know he'll sling it all over the yard.
I think you're right. I think it makes him probably the best value in terms of that you can possibly get right now. And just hammering that and saying, you know what, I'm going to take a stand here on Jameis and take a shot, because the second he signs with New Orleans or decides where he's going to go, if he goes there and he's going to be the starter, it's flying up. He's going to start going much, 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 much earlier. And their weapons that they still have there. I mean, they still have, I'm pretty sure Emmanuel Sanders is still under contract with them. I'm pretty sure that he's still there, that he'll still be available for them. And so him and Michael Thomas, Adam Trautman and Sean fucking Payton. So, and I'm sure they'll do something in the draft to address some of these other positions they have. So, getting Jameis behind that offensive line with Sean Payton would be like sex. So, yes, I think that he makes him for just an absolutely incredible value.
Yeah, and you don't have to spend a lot to get a guy like Jameis right now. You could get him in the second to last round, if not the last round, basically, in some of the drafts that we're seeing. As we get ready to wrap it up, guys, and we are talking about middle and late round targets, and I just wanted to hit on something because we haven't touched on this in any one of the shows. Like, if we're talking about middle and late round targets, what would be a scenario for you guys to be looking at handcuffs in the middle and late rounds as we get to this? I know handcuffs are always a thing. People always want to talk about, should I handcuff this guy because I drafted him so early, or should I handcuff this guy because it's a committee? And there are so many certain unknowns, so to speak, at this point. So it does make it a little bit more difficult to think about truly getting a handcuff. But Kev, as you were talking, you brought up Darrington Evans, like thinking about getting a guy like Derrick Henry in the first round. If something were to happen to him, they don't really have any other backs right now that could fill in besides Darrington. And he did get drafted in a decent spot last year. You're taking a guy like McFarland or Snell in Pittsburgh. If they don't get anybody, Jonathan Taylor, he's going early. Can you get Nyheim Hines later? I'm just interested to see if that gets to any of you guys, if you'd be looking to do that, or when you would be looking to handcuff, if any. Maddie, I can start with you.
Yeah, so I probably approach handcuffs different than a lot of people. I personally do not handcuff ever, because I think you're capping your upside. It kind of goes back to, you know, if you're taking three quarterbacks and you only got one slot, you're kind of capping your upside there too. But let's say the Cowboys are a perfect example, right? Let's say I draft Zeke in the first, back into the first round, and I'm like, man, but if Zeke, anything happens to Zeke, Tony Pollard is going to absolutely smash. And I know everybody's thinking, well, in regular season long, I think handcuffs are probably more acceptable. But in best ball, if I lose Zeke, my first round pick, and the thinking is, okay, well, I have Pollard to replace him. Well, the ultimate leverage would be to not have drafted Zeke, but to draft Pollard. And so now Zeke gets hurt. I not only have Pollard acting as Zeke, but I still have my first round pick that was not Zeke and is still active. So I now have both. And that's kind of the thing that can vault you to the top of the standings, is having that quote unquote handcuff, but not handcuffed to a guy on your team. So that's how I approach it from a high ceiling standpoint. I just think if you're using two players to fill one roster spot, you're just limiting your upside. So that's just how I've approached it in best ball. Now, season long can be a little different, because obviously you got to pick and choose guys to play week in and week out, and you don't get to automatically fill your team with points. And you're looking for weekly production. So that is slightly different, but yeah, for best ball, I'm out on the handcuffs.
Kev, what say you?
Took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly, like, you should never handcuff your own guys. It doesn't matter if it's best ball or if it's redraft. Like, season long, it doesn't matter. Like, you are handcuffing yourself in terms of the ceiling you're going to be able to get out of. So no, you should never handcuff your own guys in best ball ever. You should always be trying to get everybody else's handcuffs, because that is where you all automatically win. So yes, you should take guys like Alexander Mattison and Tony Pollard and guys like that who have an opportunity to just smash. Like we saw with Tony Pollard last year when Zeke Elliott went out. Like, those guys' ceilings go up immensely, but you should never take your own handcuffs, because you're not helping yourself any. And there's no guarantee that you're even going to fucking pick the handcuff right, to be honest with you. So let's say, I don't know, if you're a team and you handcuff your guy, and you know, you have no idea how many times we think we know who the guy is.
You pick Leonard Fournette in the first round, and then you handcuff him with Ozigbo, and yeah, it ends up being James Robinson.
Yeah,
no, not Ozigbo, Ryquil Armstead.
Oh yeah, Armstead too.
For Jacksonville, I'll
never forget
Saquon Barkley last
you
year.
Have to, But it, not even that, but like, if you go back to a few, I mean, this was probably what, 5 or 6 years ago now, but Zach Stacy, whenever he won people leagues, I can't even remember the fucking other running back it was, but there was another running back. I can't remember off the top of my head. I have to look it up.
Yes,
you're right. It was Benny Cunningham. That's who it was. I'm pretty sure that's who it was. And everybody thought he was going to be the guy, and it ended up being Zach Stacy. And of course, we all know now how all that turned out. But more often than not, we don't know who that guy actually is going to be, unless it's a clear cut, like Alexander Mattison would be, or Tony Pollard, where we just know, okay, that guy's going to be the number two. If you don't know that, and it could be an open anything,
right,
don't draft him. because you have no idea what you're doing. You're just taking shots.
And I wanted to bring that up, because I think it's important, because it comes up every time, every draft, everything that people get into. You always think about handcuffs. Oh, I have this guy. What if he gets hurt or anything like that? Especially, you know, guys like Zeke who just were banged up, or Barkley even, who were banged up. Like, when is Wayne Gallman going to go in best ball drafts? It could be interesting, but we just don't know. And to be honest with you guys, I brought it up because I don't really think about it from a redraft standpoint, because you do have to, and you have to look at Tony Pollard being on your roster and being like, oh, I don't want to drop him because I drafted him for this reason to be on my team. So that makes it hurt. Whereas best ball, like, you can set it and forget it. Like, oh, I drafted Tony Pollard. I kind of forgot about, I have him on the team, and now Zeke's down. So that ends up being one thing. But yeah, redraft's a whole different story, but always fun to bring that up as draft equity. We're going to do a ton of these, guys. It's best ball, here on the DGen Nation podcast with your favorite DGen Nation pod powered by the Fantasy Authority. You guys got anything else to touch on in the middle of late rounds as we get ready to sign off?
No, I didn't really touch on anybody up top. I just want to mention Michael Thomas is being drafted too low. I think he's got an injury discount going in over 20 ADP. Draft Michael Thomas, guys.
Yeah. And Kev, you brought up Julio Jones. Is there anything else that you saw at the top? I mean,
not really at this point. I think Zeke Elliott is going a little bit too low for compared to typically he's a top three or four guy. And I think with Dak Prescott back and everything else there with that offense, I think that he could end up being somebody that's going a little bit too low for where he probably should go. But no, I think overall it's shoot for ceiling, boys. Early rounds, draft a little bit, more for a little bit of floor, not complete floor, but they still have to have a high ceiling. But but once you get past third, fourth, fifth round, somewhere in there, it's time to go fucking headhunting. We're just looking for the fucking golden lottery tickets to get you over, especially if you are playing in the the ones with the big payouts, the tournament types, right? Like if you're just playing in your standard 12 team, that's all it's ever going to be. You can do a little bit of things, but once you start getting into the tournaments, that's where things get a little bit more different, and you really have to start trying to take a turn because you're trying to take that motherfucker down, not just place. Yeah. So you're trying to take it down. You have to try some different things and do a little bit of strategy and get outside of your comfort zone to do some of these things because that's what's going to win it. And it's like we said last week with these guys. Once you get to the late rounds, don't be taking fucking the safe fucking like Larry Fitzgerald types or whatever. Never do that. Don't ever do that. Shoot for upside and shoot for guys that aren't being drafted because that's how you land on James Robinson.
True. I mean, yeah, you might even be – James Robinson might not even be going in some of your best balls as last year. But, no, that's always fun. And a guy – or I won't say a guy – a situation that I'll bring up as we get ready to sign off here, it's not somebody that's going underdrafted. I think overdrafted is the Seattle situation with Russell Wilson. I mean, I won't be taking – DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, where these guys are going, if we're not even certain that Russell Wilson is going to be there, or if he's there, will they let him cook? Like where you have to draft both of these guys, it's like Tyler Lockett, how do you even try and believe in him to be a substantial guy for you where you're getting that draft equity? And then DK Metcalf, if it's not Russell Wilson throwing in the ball, I mean, it damn well sure be somebody else who's close to get him there. I get it, the raw talent and everything like that. But the quarterback position, it just makes it a little bit worry for me of where these guys are going. So I do tend to side on the air of caution with the Seattle situation until we kind of know where that settles in at. But fun ride with you guys. It's the DJ Nation pod powered by the Fantasy Authority here talking about the top, middle, and late round targets. We're doing best ball content for you guys all off season long as we get into the draft and get into free agency. So pop on over to the channel. We're having fun here. Subscribe to the channel on YouTube. Like the video. Tell us what we're doing good, what you want to hear more from. We're open to the suggestions. If you're listening to this podcast on your podcast software, give us a rate and review. We always like that. And you can comment there as well. And we appreciate that. Hit us up on Twitter at DGen Nation Pod. And we're going to be doing this more often than not. So we're having fun here with Underdog, with the best ball tens, with all of the best balls that are being offered. And until DraftKings opens up, it's going to be wheels up there. So signing off for the DJ Nation pod for this week, top, middle, late round targets. Myself, Ryan Alexander _W is where you can find me on Twitter. The Godfather himself, Child Please, Mr. Kevin Steele at Fantasy Rat 13, Maddie 2v2, Maddie Gets Buckets at Maddie DFS on Twitter, Maddie Dickinson. It's the DJ Nation pod, guys. We appreciate you guys rocking with us in this offseason for the best ball content. We'll be back for some more. But until then, peace and get that money.
Think you could tell me what to do? You know who you're talking to? Well, you better get used to the way the ball bounces. I see what you got in measures and ounces. But that's a break, boy. Yeah, that's a break, little man. Break it down. Think you're right, you know?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.